There were some later crusades. There were efforts to send Western Europeans against the Ottoman Turks. There's a crusade in 1396, another one in 1447. Both of them were really the King of Hungary with some French allies trying to oppose the Ottoman advance in the Balkans. And these crusades were actually, on invitation of the Byzantine emperors, of all things, these were crusades in a way that were closer to the original idea of the Byzantine emperors. They were primarily there to aid Constantinople against the Turks. The only problem was, at this point, all the Byzantine emperors controlled was Constantinople, and the Turks had most of the Balkans and Asia Minor, and these turned out to be rather disastrous expeditions, the battles of Nicopolis and Varna. And really, with Varna in 1447, there aren't any more crusader indulgences, and through most of the 14th, 15th century, the fighting with the Turks really was more on the order of border wars. That is, the Christian powers on the edge of the Ottoman Sultanate fought them. They summoned in some allies, but these were not crusades in the way I had defined them earlier in the course. Crusading imagery continues to be invoked in the later battles with the Ottomans. You can find it symbols of it used in the great naval victory at Lepanto in 1571, the fighting between Austrians and Ottomans, and the images continue in later generations. But for all intents and purposes, with 1291, the crusading experience was over. Acre had fallen. There was no hope of mounting a new expedition. Any thoughts of preaching a crusade, that was going to fall on deaf ears, and the popes didn't really attempt it. Well, what did these two centuries mean of fighting between Muslims and Christians, and a good deal of time with Byzantines as well? How had the world changed? Well, it's useful to sum up some of the themes I've been talking about in these last 35 lectures. Let's look at the Islamic world first. For the Islamic world, it was, contrary, as I said, to the opinions of some, quite a profound experience. The fall of Jerusalem in 1099 was an event that was not supposed to happen. Unbelievers, people who were protected but clearly, you know, secondary citizens in the Islamic world, their co-religionists, these Western Europeans, had come into the heartland of Islam and seized cities. Furthermore, they had expanded their control, established very effective kingdoms, in my opinion, in the 12th century, which required a great deal of effort, several efforts to construct larger political orders to drive these Franks of the coast out of Outremer. And it wasn't until 1291, that is two centuries later, that that had been achieved. Now, one could explain this, well, the Muslims were delayed because of fighting among themselves, the Crusaders weren't that much of a threat, there were more important events going on with the Mongols, and all of this has a certain amount of truth to it. But the simple fact of the matter is that Islam had been put on the defensive, had been caught short, and fought a foe that had been quite formidable, despite all the problems of sustaining those expeditions overseas. Those wars had led to certain changes in the Islamic world. In some cases, they accelerated and influenced changes already in process. As I argued in several earlier lectures, it helped very decisively in the shift of the new axis of Islamic power to Cairo and to Asia Minor. The Crusades were very important in that shift. Baghdad lost its importance, the lands of Eastern Islam. The Mongols came in and confirmed that shift. They destroyed Baghdad. They made a mess of the lands of Eastern Islam for 100 years, and eventually these lands will revive and will reorient on Iran. But nonetheless, that shift over to Cairo and eventually to Constantinople created new Islamic powers, and that eventually would lead to the creation of the Ottoman Empire, the Great Porte, which would unite all of the traditional lands of Islam into the great state. It also resulted in several other important changes. For one, it confirmed the position of the Turkish military elites. And what came out of the Crusades are political orders, Mamluks in Egypt, even the sultans of Delhi in India, eventually the Ottoman sultans, the dynasties that ruled in Iran, that ultimately depended on Turkish military elites. And the Islamic world would be very much, in many ways, united by this political military elite that ruled from the Danube, ultimately to the Indus. And that was an important consequence for Islamic history in the period after the Crusades, that you had a new set of political orders. This raised issues of authority. What, under these circumstances, what were the bonds of unity within the Islamic world? And this became quite a dilemma after the Mongols had sacked Baghdad in 1258. That was eventually solved. It was solved by the Mamluks by creating a phantom caliphate in Cairo. They claim they found the uncle of the last caliph in Baghdad. We're not sure if he was really the uncle or not. Could have been an imposter. They brought him back to Cairo and claimed that the Mamluks were ruling as the agents of the Abbasids. And when Selim the Grim, the Ottoman Sultan, took Egypt in 1515-1517, he solved the problem by assuming the title of Caliph and Sultan. That is, a Turkish ruler, a member of a Turkish military elite, was now the spiritual as well as the political head of the Islamic world. And what that was an effort to get back to that earlier vision of Islam that you saw in the Abbasid Caliphate. And in some ways, that was an unfortunate choice, because when that order was shattered with Napoleon in 1799, it led to a whole set of problems in the breakup of the Islamic world that are still with us today.